big windows were suddenly all aglow in the lightning. Doomed to perpetual idleness, I didn't do a thing, and would gaze for hours on end through the windows at the sky, birds, avenues. I would read everything that came with the post, and I slept. Sometimes I would go out and wander around until late evening. Once, as I was returning home, I happened to stray into the grounds of a manor house that was unfamiliar to me. The sun was already sinking, and the evening shadows lay across the flowering rye. Two rows of closely planted, towering fir trees stood like solid, unbroken walls, forming a handsome, sombre avenue. I easily climbed the fence and walked down the avenue, slipping on pine needles that lay about 2 inches deep on the ground. It was quiet and dark. Only high up in the treetops a vivid golden light quivered here and there and transformed spiders' webs into shimmering rainbows. The smell of resin from the firs was almost stifling. Then I turned into a long avenue of lime trees, and here too all was neglect and age. Last year's leaves rustled sadly underfoot, and in the dusk shadows lurked between the trees. In the old fruit orchard to the right, an oriole sang feebly, reluctantly, most probably because he too was old. But then the limes ended. I went past a white house with a terrace and a kind of mezzanine, or attic story. And suddenly a vista opened up. A courtyard, a large pond with bathing place, a clump of green willows, and a village on the far bank with a slender, tall bell tower whose cross glittered in the setting sun. For one fleeting moment I felt the enchantment of something very close and familiar to me, as though I had once seen this landscape as a child. At the white stone gates that led from the courtyard into open country, sturdy, old-fashioned gates surmounted by lions, two young girls were standing. One of them, the elder, who was slim, pale, and very pretty, with a mass of auburn hair and a small, stubborn mouth, wore a stern expression and hardly looked at me. But the other girl, still very young, no more than 17 or 18, similarly slim and pale, with large mouth and big eyes, looked at me in astonishment as I passed by. She said something in English and seemed embarrassed, and it seemed that I had long known these two charming faces. I returned home with the feeling that it had all been a lovely dream. Soon afterwards, when I was strolling with Bolokhorov one day around noon by the house, a light-sprung carriage suddenly drove into the yard, rustling over the grass. In it was one of the girls, the elder. She was collecting money for some villagers whose houses had burnt down. Without looking at us, she gave a serious, detailed report about how many houses had burnt down in the village of Sianov, how many women and children had been left homeless, and what immediate measures the relief committee, to which she now belonged, was proposing to take. After getting us to sign the list, she put it away and immediately started saying goodbye. "You've quite forgotten us, Pyotr Petrovich," she told Bolokhorov as she gave him her hand. "Please come and see us, and if Monsieur N," she mentioned my name, "would like to see some admirers of his work and fancies paying us a visit, Mama and I would be really delighted." I bowed. When she had driven off, Pyotr Petrovich started telling me about her. He said that the girl was of good family and that her name was Lydia Vorchaninov. The estate on which she lived with her mother and sister, like the large village on the other side of the pond, was called Shelkovka. Her father had once held an important post in Moscow and was a high-ranking civil servant when he died. Although they were very well off, the Vorchaninovs never left their estate summer or winter. Lydia taught in their own rural school in Shelkovka at a monthly salary of 25 rubles. She spent nothing else besides this money on herself and was proud of earning her own living.
"An interesting family," said Bolokhorov. "Well, go and visit them one day if you like. They'd be delighted to see you."
One day after dinner, it was some sort of holiday, we remembered the Vorchaninovs and went over to see them at Shelkovka. The mother and her two daughters were at home. Yekaterina Pavlovna, the mother, obviously once very pretty but now plump for her age, sad, short-winded and absent-minded, tried to entertain me with talk about painting. Having learnt from her daughter that I might be coming to see them at Shelkovka, she hurriedly mentioned two or three of my landscapes that she'd seen at Moscow exhibitions, and now she asked me what I wanted to express in them. Lydia, or Lida, as she was called at home, talked more to Bolokhorov than to me. Serious and unsmiling, she asked him why he wasn't on the local council and had so far never attended a single meeting.